Welcome to Stories That Matter, the Hawkwood podcast. Today we're joined by musicians Sam Lee and Sho McDatta. We hear from them around how they use their music as their own form of activism.
Let's start at the beginning, Sam, and the foundation of Music Declares Emergency. And how did this come about? How did you found it? When did you do it? And what was the idea behind Music Declares Emergency right from the beginning?
Well, I should say that Music Declares is not much more than about 2 years old, yet kind of the fossil records are a little bit uncertain of who was where at what time. But it's sort of it's currently in a state of a small working group of us that have ultimately connected as being members of the music industry in one way or another. And are all people who are either running record labels, there's a few of us who are musicians, working in PR, working in different sides of the industry. And we ostensibly all came together through connection with Extinction Rebellion. We're all very much part of the spring uprising that was happening this time exactly 2 years ago, and inspired by that movement to see how we could formulate a way of actually engaging the music industry together. So a round table kind of was created, all in back gardens in Hackney and on Zoom as well. And we started to kind of devise this set of principles and directives and create our sort of ledger of agreements that we were going to call upon the music industry to sign up to, which is about declaring climate emergency, about reaching carbon zero by 2030, how important that date was, about telling the truth about climate change, and really trying to sort of see how we could leverage the music industry's support and endorsement, and bit by bit work in different places. And it's kind of a wonderful thing that 2 years later, we're at the beginning of a week of climate action, this Turn Up the Volume week, which has sort of become a bit of a coalescing of lots of different campaigns that we've been launching. Our No Music on a Dead Planet slogan that's become our t-shirt campaign, which has become our playlist, which has become our radio show, which has become all the banners that are given to artists to put up, you know, to wrap themselves in at award ceremonies. And it's kind of been a little bit radical at the same time as a little bit strategic, and working from the inside to address all the areas of where greenhouse gases are sort of being emitted from music and our activities, and how we can change the operations across the board, but in a unified way as an industry choice, not just an individual choice.
So one of the things I was thinking about, Sam, with your music when we first decided to do this event was the different ways in which it's possible to campaign, to educate, to create activism around the subject. And you mentioned XR before, so you've got this very direct action approach where it's take over the streets, take over city centres. But equally, through the music that you make, there's other ways into changing the way in which people see the world through their hearts, through their minds. Is that a conscious way of approaching this, that actually let's find as many different routes to people as possible in getting this message out there?
Absolutely. And, you know, this the wonderful thing about music is that it reaches every community. There is not one community out there that isn't necessarily affected by music in one way, or is it not part of their, you know, their experience. And so, you know, I as an artist sit within the MDE spectrum of, you know, groups and sort of communities and audiences. But I'm really fascinated MDE's potential, and I'll speak a bit about, you know, my approach a little bit, MDE's potential to kind of actually be in some way something that unifies the music industry like nothing else, because the climate crisis is such a multifaceted thing that's contributed, but it affects different populations in different ways, but essentially music can reach the people that actually are hearing at least of all and are ostensibly unaware of the impacts of climate change. Well, I'm not concerned about it as much, maybe because they've got other issues they have to deal with. So, you know, and I've always worked on the principle, and I think MDE does this brilliantly, which is to beat the opposition and to win over people, you have to throw a better party. And hey, we're the entertainment industry. We know how to throw parties. We know how to make things look cool. We know how to take an issue and frame it in such a way that it's actually something that people want to be part of, and not actively go, oh, I don't have to deal with that. My approach in my kind of whimsical, romantic, sort of folky way is that, you know, I want to lead people into a more sensual and maybe a more sensitive and emotional look at what the role that nature plays within our lives through music, through song, through more kind of ceremonial means, perhaps. And that I kind of sit in this place where I'm advocating very much ultimately through the folk song that I work with and through my relationship with nature to draw attention to the ecological decline, but particularly ecological decline on British shores, because the climate crisis isn't an outward thing that's happening just in the global south or, you know, in for citizens in countries we may never visit. It's actually happening on these shores at a very exponential rate. And we have a rate of nature decline in this country, which is higher than anywhere else in Europe, and a rate of deforestation, which is faster than in Brazil relative to the amount of woodland that we have. So there's so much evidence to go that actually this is a crisis that's happening right on our doorstep. And let's focus on what we have to lose right here, right now, so that people can actually start to see that as something that will affect them. And how do we create a broker, a sort of relationship, a new relationship through music of experience and connectivity and adoration of what is being lost that might help people start to accept the change that's needed for the sake of it being impacting something that they've grown to love because of the power of this movement. There's been some really great things happening. Firstly, we've got the launch of Earth Percent, which is a massive concept founded by a group of people, including Brian Eno, who's been the pioneers, which is about creating a financial structure so that artists and the industry can declare a percentage of income, of net income, at events, out of sales, that is directly sent to this organization, which does the amazing work of disseminating funds to projects that are working on environmentalism. We've got the Carbon Negative campaign has been launched with Universal Records, Universal and Beggars and Ninja Tunes all declaring themselves to be going carbon negative. So they'll be actually carbon sort of positive, is in that they will be sequestering carbon through their practices as opposed to being carbon emitters within the next several years. So massive industry players who are saying it is possible, financially possible, for us to be actually being carbon unimpacting. And I should probably put a shout out here for my own record label, Cooking Vinyl, who phoned me up the other day saying, what's all this about going carbon negative? We've been carbon negative for 8 years. Everyone cycles to work. We've got solar panels and our office is completely, we've been doing it all along. So actually, this is not brand new, but to see such big players who are, as you say, millions, billions of turnover, actually annual turnover, and responsible for a major chunk of the industry. That's, you know, that's not easy stuff to put past the, you know, board members and, you know, and the accountants. So that's major planning has been going on behind the scenes from these organizations, which means that they are they're beating the path to make it a standard practice for everyone to do it, which will ultimately normalize and make it for the small organizations whose, you know, profit margins are much more shaky and uncertain to actually follow in the footsteps and benefit from some of the trailblazing that they're doing. We've launched classical declares, which is the classical music industry, which of course, by the nature of the size of orchestras, is actually has a huge impact. They've set up, alongside many other European chapters of music declares. We've had now over 5,000 signups from artists and industry members. And ultimately what we've had is gone from a sort of radical organization with loads of trolling on our social media. We're suddenly getting enormous love, and artists are reposting and declaring themselves, wearing our t-shirts, and aggregating kind of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of fan likes and awareness. So that's the big thing. It's suddenly ballooning exponentially, the sort of the profile of MDE.
I don't know how you do it, Sam, but not only are you part of this week of activity here with Music Declares Emergency, you've also got all kinds of other events that you're doing that, like I say, for me, you know, they're complementary, they're kind of a slightly different approach, but you know, they're your own approach, but still they contain the same seed, they contain the same message and the same hope for this ecological regeneration, this kind of, you know, this ideas throughout everything you do. So could you tell us more about those events that are coming up as well?
Yeah, with pleasure. Because actually my guilt is that I haven't been as involved in Turn Up the Volume as I'd like, because I've just a few weeks ago released my first novel, which is the kind of biography of the nightingale, that famous bird, which coincides with last week and this week, we're launching the 6 weeks of series of concerts and live streams of nightingale singing at night with a lot of musicians, poets, and creatives contributing material, songs and prose to create these wonderful online streams, and Lissy was part of it. We've got the Earth Day one on the 22nd happening, which was second year we've done the Earth Day live stream, and then from the 23rd we'll have live audiences finally gathering in the forest for 6 weeks of basically concerts and gatherings with nightingales. So that's a huge production for me. I go into residence in the woods and just welcome people into to the fireside, which is an absolute joy, but a lot of work. There's also alongside that, loads of other campaigns and things going on. We're just about to launch, I should say, a collaboration with Hawkwood for musicians, which is a 48-hour residential nature immersion experience, which is giving musicians of all generations and all levels of career success the opportunity to learn some of the experience, go through some of the experience of nature reconnection, nature immersion that's worked within the kind of indigenous rewilding practices of human connectivity with the nature, or bushcraft, wilderness craft, wilderness skills, alongside some of this more real sort of structured learning about music and environmentalism. So it's a sort of cocktail of the two, of the experiential and the intellectual, to see how nature can be brought back into the arts to be more of a more of an inspiration, as opposed to a campaign. Mm. So that's the Amplify residency, which you can find out through the Nest Collective, which is my live events organization. And loads of other things happening that I can't remember right now, and you probably want to move on. So I'll shut up.
Let's hand over to Alicia and Shomik for a few minutes and find out, because I know that Shomik has his own connection with Hawkwood, but indeed an incredible amount of work going on and support for this as well in his own right. So let's find out from Alicia and Shomik a bit more about what's going on from that side of things as well.
So, Shomik, welcome. It is an honour to have you as part of this conversation. And let's start with how you found Hawkwood. Why not? So where were we? I think it was via an amazing artist called Matthew Barley, the cellist. Is that right?
You know, I think, Alicia, it probably goes back before that. The answer is probably with Sir David Green.
Ah.
Because the connection is then... Dartington.
That's right, of course.
Which is where you were, and which is where David was. David Green is still my mentor for many, many years. He was the Director General at British Council for a long time, and he's had the most incredible life. We met at Dartington when you were there, and actually developed a relationship, and he sort of helped me sort of articulate the kind of music that I wanted to make and why I wanted to make it, and where I wanted to go with creativity in many ways, and I think you know, that's the first time I heard about Hawkwood. You know, this was maybe 5 years ago or something, and swiftly on after that, through Matthew Barley, the wonderful cellist, and of course Matthew and I were there.
Just
at Hawkwood, having an amazing time a few weeks ago.
Yeah, so it's been such an honour to welcome such extraordinary artists to our residency programme. And the Hawkwood residency programme, as I said, has artists of all disciplines that come together. But what I love about it, and which you won't have experienced yet, I say yet, because I know you're going to come back, is how in our dining room you could have a sort of environmental business next to people on an educational course, next to artists creating work. And I think sometimes it's that cross-sector that encourages inspiration and different conversations that I've understand from artists really helps influence their work. So
always around food. It's the
always
key.
Around food.
The key to get anything done. And the food at Hawkwood, my God, yeah.
That's right. Well, it would be wonderful to hear a little bit about what you were working on when you were at Hawkwood and how you ended up coming to create your project around Silent Spaces.
Sure. Well, first of all, I should say hello, everyone, and absolutely fantastic to hear about what Sam's doing, what MD is doing. Really incredible work, and I'm so lucky to sort of be part of this conversation and see the wheels churning out there as well, in such magnificent revolutions. And I guess last year I was like many people, like many artists, you know, we were stuck at home and we'd lost out on all our shows, and we were sort of contemplating the purpose of life and existence and plants and time and space and dreams. And at some point, I think the key that turned for me was silence, because you sit around in your home and the roads are empty and no one's outside, and you know, the only noise is on the TV, and then you realize, actually, is it though? There are all these other noises happening, and you start tuning in to the thoughts internally, but also, you know, very small, minute details around the house. You know, the frequency that your fridge whirs at, the slight creaking as you come up the stairs, you know, when you go to bed, or whatever it is. And I realized that really music is just everywhere. In the tapping of rhythms and the whirring of household electrics. And I think when I started exploring that, I was literally going around the house recording things, and at some point I thought I was going mad. But that project, actually, I was very lucky, that project turned into a wonderful Radio 3 series, and I got commissioned by them and the space to turn those recordings into a series called Sounds of Silence, which is still on iPlayer, if you want to hear it. It's a 5-part series, sort of going through what those sounds made me think about, what the silence made me think about. And when I started reaching out to other musicians around the country, what their sounds were and what their silences were. That project, I mean, pretty much as soon as it had finished, I realized that this was heading somewhere. This wasn't the end of that project. But it was, it had given birth to almost something else, also to do with silence. And I realized that, especially after so many things that were happening last year, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, especially, which affected me in many different ways, it occurred to me that there were also societal silences that weren't being broken, or I felt that were sort of taboos in some way still, or controversial, and it just infuriated me. Somewhere down the line, it occurred to me that there were actual spaces, there were buildings, cultural centers, museums around this country that resonated with many of those themes, you know, and some of those themes had to do with, diversity, racism, decolonization, climate change, sustainability, disability or mixed ability, you know, all kinds of issues that I felt were sort of hanging in this cloud of silence that was 2020. And out of that was born this project called Silent Spaces, which has been quite an incredible journey. And we released the first episode of 6 episodes starting next Tuesday. So please stay tuned for that. Those of you who'd like to see it, the first episode is shot at British Museum. And the concept was very simple, that I wanted to enter these spaces during a time when they were closed, when they were silent, and break their silence with new creativity, new songs about themes that I felt needed addressing. And that's why we also wanted to come to Hawkwood.
Fantastic, because you really wove the climate agenda into the piece, particularly at Hawkwood. I think that was sort of representative in your work.
That's right. It wasn't the first time that I'd made music sort of about things to do with, climate change. Last year, I was sort of working with an organization called Earth Day Network, who are, well, all over the world, but their headquarters are in Washington. And I was in particular in touch with the India team. And we were sort of trying to understand what the role of art and artists was to try and prevent these beautiful forests in the South being completely deforested because they were trying to build railroads through this land. And out of that project came an EP that I released called Jungle, which is a strange word. It's spelled J-A-N-G-A-L, and it doesn't really exist in the English language, but it's the origins of the word jungle as we know it, and it's a Persian word, and in Persian it means two things. It means an abundance of greenery, and it means desolate desert.
And fascinating to have those two juxtapositions there in one word.
Yeah. And I just thought that that's the sort of, well, those are the two options that we have now. And depending on what we do as a people, as a global community, and those are the two roads that's the fork that we see now.
Yes.
So Jungle came out last year, and so it was very much on my mind to make more work around that could maybe, you know, through lyrics and song and words and poetry, try and open up this conversation and get some of my listeners to start talking about it in their own homes. Yeah, I'd love for you all to see it. It was, so the music video for Jungle is shot entirely in this incredible sort of delta of Bengal, which is where I'm from. I'm from sort of the east part of India, which is called Bengal. And it's a sort of climate hotspot because it gets flooded every year. There are huge communities of farmers and fishermen who have to migrate every year back and forth, and a lot of a lot of land is lost, there's a lot of life lost, And so I wanted this piece to really be shot there, and it would be impossible to do it now, but I'm so grateful that we were able to do it. And my brother, who's a filmmaker, directed it, and he of course is the director for Silent Spaces as well. So
yes, he's an extraordinary filmmaker. But you have it in the family, because I remember first meeting your mother actually at Dartington on a Tagore project that we worked together on, which is interesting how these themes come round, because of course Rabindranath Tagore has got such extraordinary poetry around sort of the arts and land and community and bringing all these things together. So always such an inspiration to think about his work.
Yeah, you know, Alicia, I was, you know, we had a chat earlier today, and you mentioned to me that you met my mum many years ago at Dartington as well. And it made me realize a couple of things that, you know, we, as a kid, I grew up in Mumbai, and my mum was really involved in the sort of, I mean, she is even now, involved in the sort of cultural scene. And there would be, she'd put on these massive festivals and dances and poetry and music, and so many people, I don't know how she did it, you know, would gather, and it'd be huge audiences. And I grew up in that world. It was only much later that I realized what each of those events marked. And they were festivals that marked the change of the seasons. So many of the songs were songs by Rabindranath Tagore. They were about nature. Yes. And so I think there was a subliminal education. And she was my first teacher in that way. And those events, you know, very lasting memories as well. Colorful,
I bet,
vibrant memories. Were probably the first time, I didn't even know it, that we were sort of trying to celebrate music and nature.
Well, there's the extraordinary work, isn't there? Forgive me if I pronounce it incorrectly, but Gitanjali, is that correct, of Tagore's work that really draws so many of these threads together. But I'd love to hear about your upcoming project, if you're able to share information about that, because you're going to be coming back to Hawkwood to and work with some of our wider partners. So Hawkwood has a wide network of businesses, environmentalists, and I know that you're particularly looking forward to coming to Hawkwood to create your next work, which we'll hear about, but also hopefully have some input from some of our climate partners as well.
Yeah, that's right. I can't wait to come back. So the next project after Silent Spaces is something called Songs of the Earth. And it was a commission from the British Council to create new work in the lead up to COP26, which happens this year in Glasgow in November. And so the piece is going to be another video series, and I wanted it to be not filmed. I wanted to try and create a project that had really little to no carbon footprint, and but still have the scope and the sort of breadth of film. And the answer was animation. And so this the idea, without giving away too much, because it's due out in the fall, but without giving away too much, it's a series of music animation films that take you on a journey through various climate hotspots around the world, where through music and what you see and song and lyrics, you maybe have a slightly better understanding of what's happening in that part of the world.
Fantastic. I mean, I think knowledge and sharing of knowledge through music, as we said earlier, and as Sam and Matt said, reaches so many people. The power of music is just extraordinary to change hearts and minds. And if we can spread these important messages through people's work and creativity, then it feels a very positive step forward. So that's
yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, until last year, I had never worked remotely. And even the concept of working remotely with collaborators somewhere else, I mean, I know people did it, but it just never excited me. I wanted to be in the room. But it's possible, or it's certainly possible to find a middle ground, to do more work remotely so that you can reduce carbon emissions, you can reduce flights. There are ways of sort of distributing work, collaborating with others that don't need you to be, you know, affecting the atmosphere, the precious atmosphere.
No, that's right. Well, we will forgive you your travel if you cycle to us at Hawkwood for your residency. And may that be the only carbon emission that we put out for this project. We were talking about how we could avoid it, but it is going to be very special having you come to actually create at Hawkwood. So
I might pull out my Brompton and see how far I get.
Fantastic. Every time we have artists walking through our door to create work, it just makes my heart absolutely sing. It's what Hawkwood is here for. Can I just jump in actually on some of the earlier questions about some of our climate work? Because I think it might link into how Sam and I connected. I may have got it wrong. But we've been working with Julie's Bicycle for several years. And they were introduced to us by Good Energy, who are our ethical energy supplier and that we work with very closely here and who support us with a lot of our events. And Julie's Bicycle came to Hawkwood to have their Creative Climate Leaders program here, which welcomed a lot of arts pioneers to come and talk about climate change and how to integrate it within organizations to address the issues. That is one aspect of where we at Hawkwood welcome people to come and use us as a space, but we also curate work. So we, in 2011, I think produced one of the first climate change festivals in the UK, which is called Seed Festival. I tell a lie, it's 2013, because 2011 was the Gore Festival. So it's 2013, and we had Seed Festival for a day, which grew year on year, and welcomed artists, creative thought leaders, industry leaders to talk about climate change in their work. And that has led on to our hugely successful climate action labs that we've developed, which are 3-day events for businesses and organizations to come to learn about how to adapt their work and the way they run their business to make sure that they mitigate their impact on the planet. So we have absolutely incredible speakers that come and support us here. The top thought leaders in the country come together to share their ideas. Mike Berners-Lee, I think, was our opening speaker for one of our first climate action labs, who is the authority on carbon. So we have a real mixed agenda here, but they all intertwine. And there are many other things, but I will hand over to Sam if I've got that connection right as to how we how you first came to Hawkwood, Sam.
All roads lead to Hawkwood. If you have any interest in this work, it's a name that comes up, you know, in the same breath as Dartington, Schumacher, and Bakum, as these sort of, you know, it's like, you know, there's the sacred stone circles of Great Britain, and then there's also these places of regeneration and inspiration and reconnection that happen, and Hawkwood is definitely one of them. And I'm pretty certain that, you know, it's kind of going back to what you're saying about as a home for MDE, when the sea levels rise, the Stroud Hills with safe havens like yourselves, with locally grown, you know, you're basically, you're existing in the to the ideal that we are all aspiring to, which is that idea of, you know, global concepts happening on a local level. So I was sort of, I think I sensed Hawkwood first before I even connected what was going on there, and had invitations and things that manifested in me taking advantage of one of your generous offers to come and create, which is a rare thing for artists. You know, we have a hard time and we're having an even harder time. So the safe harboring of a place just to be creative alone was very powerful. And of course, the wonderful thing is that while the artist is in there creating and opening up, they're also very susceptible to the sort of ideals and principles that you live to. And I think it's incredible how, as an artist, when you're actually surrounded by people doing the good work, actually embracing it and not skimping on it or cutting corners, but really showing an intentional way of being, and with a community around you that depend and fluctuate, that actually you suddenly feel that you find the music and the creativity flows a lot greater, better, and you realize actually this is maybe something that one needs to practice in their own life, in their own ways, to make sure that they are staying healthy, really, not just nutritionally healthy. So it's an amazingly impactful and Trojan horse way of kind of putting a mark on artists, which makes it even more exciting that, you know, MDE could be bringing artists there that are not necessarily from an organic permacultural background, but actually maybe experiencing on a really, you know, grand, sublime and stylish way, because it's not a, it doesn't smell of patchouli oil and sort of, and old muddy boots. It's actually, you know, it's a smart and professional environment. And I came there and I had one of the greatest outpourings of creativity in a long while with my musical collaborator, and restarted the journey of a new album, which has never had such a forceful creative start to a project, really. So I'm very grateful to you all.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. I'm so pleased. I mean, I would also like to say that we're very grateful to the Francis W. Record Arts Trust to actually help us to support artists to come and create work here. And moreover, to the Culture Recovery Fund that we've just been supported with by the DCMS and Arts Council, because Hawkwood, like many venues, as Shomik will have shared through his Silent Spaces work, have been deeply impacted by the pandemic. And the Culture Recovery Fund has been an absolute lifeline for us. And I cannot tell you how grateful we are at Hawkwood to have had that to enable us to continue to support artists here in the future. So, and we will recover and grow and develop. And we're really now looking forward to a flourishing future. So that's fantastic.
Thank you for listening to Stories That Matter, the Hawkwood podcast. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe, tell your friends, or sign up to our mailing list or on social media.